that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Oh, and Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find it flick that monster Boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric.
Yogmala, welcome back, my friends, to KFAB. I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and I am super happy to be joining you for Season 13, Days of Future Past. And talking about the future in the past, I am joined by my friends, and I have Nick Boxer.
Greetings and salutations. Super happy.
Super!
Can't we up it a level to awesomely, or I don't know, super? It's just so boring.
How about I am extraordinarily happy? Is
well,
that better?
If you want small nuts, that's the way you go.
Well, speaking of small nuts, Jack Hall!
What's up? I'm kind of sad, so take that.
Okay. And then James Cotta, are you sad?
Can I be appropriately happy?
Appropriately, yes.
And then you can kind of find your own level. I'm not in charge of your emotions.
Well, I'm about to be happy because our movie, Equalizer 2000, means that we get to hear Nick describe a plot.
Yes. I feel like he needs
Suddenly
to do
I'm
it.
I'm a very happy man.
He needs to do it in like a deep voiced British accent, like Equalizer 2000, the story of, you know, something like that. You know, really hammer it home.
Why would that be appropriate? This movie has no consistent accents in it whatsoever.
No, but it starts out with, you know, a deep voiced British accent.
Not enough to make movies make sense, don't get me wrong.
No,
at least give you something at the beginning.
Yes. So anyways, Days of Future Past, James, your concept, explain your concept for us.
All right, the concept of these films this season is that these are films that when they were released took place in the future, but the year that they took place, we have ourselves as viewers now past. So much like Blade Runner was a couple of years ago, and so was Back to the Future 2, and unfortunately, this one I don't think does take place.
No, it was in that list. It was in that list that you said, right?
It was, yeah.
But it opens up saying that they're in Alaska 100 years after the nuclear war, which means at the best it's got to be 2040.
Fair enough. I got sold by the 2000.
We're old enough to remember when you would make anything sound futuristic by putting the number 2000 after it. Like it could be the percolator 2000.
Yes. And
the year 2000.
It's the food processor 2000.
There's a fish in my percolator 2000.
When did that stop being a thing? Like it was kind of like maybe the early 90s, the 2000 didn't seem far enough away.
Well, yes. About 1996 or 97, yeah. I think we realized that we wouldn't have flying cars by the time we reached 2000. So it's like, oh, wait, we may not.
Yeah, it's
we may not have
flying cars, but we don't have to abandon the planet quite yet. So, yeah, you know, it's a trade-off.
Yeah.
I say quite yet.
Soon enough. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Stan, are you ready to start a new life in the off-world colonies?
Yes, I certainly am. I'm not at all.
I actually believe the tipping point may have been Knight Rider 2000, where we realized
That could be the end of it, because we took place like 3 years in the future or something.
Yeah.
The distant world of when you're finished college.
I'd like to mention something, by the way. If there was a nuclear war and all this, and it caused some great heat that permanently melted all the snow in Alaska, it still wouldn't look like that.
you're suggesting it wouldn't look like the Philippines?
It still would not look like that, no. It still would have something that looked like, I don't know, Alaska. Maybe a lake, for instance. They have lots of those.
I don't think you can really make that argument, because none of us would make it. Really, we are not equipped to deal with.
Does the future apocalypse require podcast hosts? If so,
that's we're definitely great. A skill that will be needed in the world of tomorrow.
Yeah. And if only we had that skill.
The shame we don't. Okay.
Pussyfooting around. Let's get to it.
Equalizer 2000, Nick. Go.
Okay, to set the stage, just assume everything is Mad Max. All Mad Max rules seem to apply in this future world. Now, our future world is ruled, or is it being attempted to rule, by the ownership. Just think Nazis in black. Our hero, Slade, is a member of the ownership. Him and his father are fairly high-ranking military officials, but during a skirmish with the rebellion, they are betrayed. The father dies, and Slade is left for dead. Immediately, he's captured by the rebels. The rebels take him back to base. He immediately escapes with no effort whatsoever. And during his escape, or during the end of his escape, I guess, he happens upon a beautiful woman in distress. He's injured saving her. She, of course, takes her back to her village, who seem to open their gates and arms to him, whereupon he is immediately healed from his injuries, and he's able to duct tape a couple guns together to create what is referred to at this point as a super gun. I have no idea. Slade wants revenge against Lawson, the guy who betrayed him in the ownership. And the rest of the movie seems to be some sort of cat and mouse thing where he's after Lawson and Lawson is after the super gun. I have no idea why the super gun is so much better than other guns, other than people seem to lay down more often than other guns when they're shooting around.
Which wouldn't be hard in this film, honestly.
No.
Are you wrapped up there? We ready to...
I was wrapped up in super gun.
Yeah. this movie has a big shootout at the beginning where they're basically like 10 feet away from each other firing fully automatic weapons, and nothing gets hit. No rocks. There's no ricochets.
That's a common theme in this entire movie. This movie out of the 90 minutes of this movie, I would suggest that 70 minutes are full on gun battles, and the rest of the
explosions.
Yeah, and the rest of the time,
so many explosions,
is entirely just them attempting to piece a story that makes sense in no way, shape, or form whatsoever. This is like, if you like people shooting at other people and never hitting anything, then this movie is for you. It's a 10.
I've watched the beginning of this. I'm like, it's forever before the first person dies.
Yeah.
I'm like, just all these guns, thousands. I'm guessing, okay, so the total body count in this movie is 58. Now, that may sound like a lot, but considering that over 10,000 bullets and 1,000 explosions must have happened in this movie, It's a pretty low percentage. And some of those people died by burning.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, and the, you know, the lesson that we learned from this movie, I know you're going to get into it, the lesson that I learned from this movie is that if you are set on fire by a flamethrower, run around with your hands in the air. That's the best way to deal with it.
Also, if you're not wearing your shirt, but catch on fire, luckily you will suddenly have a vest on.
Yes.
Because that happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well,
oh, man.
I mean.
Yeah, this thing is 50. There must have been a disconnect somewhere because there's very little profanity. In fact, there's a moment where one of the characters could say, he saved my ass, but instead says, he saved my hide. It's like and there's very little, you know, like I say, there's not as much killing as you'd think. And there's a chance for a nude scene. And the lead actress is the former Penthouse Pet of the Year, and they cut away before any nudity happens. Uh-huh. Which is kind of
No, and you know it's filmed. It was perfectly set up. Cause,
I don't know.
You know I'm on the edge of my seat, just, okay, here it comes. Okay,
I know.
The shoulder straps are off.
That would have made me, made all of us happy.
No, where's the boobage?
I know. This it's kind of like buying a football and trying to play golf with it. What are you doing? Like, a Penthouse Pet of the Year, and you don't, and you cut away from the nudity. So I'm looking, wondering if it's like, were they going for a PG rating? Because the irony is there's three versions of this because it got cut places for violence, even though the version we saw had all the violence. And I'm like, there's the one scene where, you know, without a spoiler, somebody dies near the end. It's particularly controversial because blood's coming out of their stomach and whatever, and it's the lead character. But looking at it, it's like such red paint, so fake looking. Like, I have no idea how this movie was cut and a problem place in places for violence, because frankly, it's ridiculous.
Is this our first
Santiago
film? I think it's our second, isn't it?
That's a good question. I mean, I know he's a ginormous filmmaker for sure. So,
I think we've done something.
Eight billion.
yeah,
films. Yeah,
100 directing credits on IMDb for him.
Mm-hmm,
He was one of the go-to VHS guys because he was. And it is that, like, he was a Filipino director who, of course, made all these one American films. We're spending a ton of time in the Philippines making movies. So he was making he's got four credited movies in 88 and four credited movies in 87.
Oh no! And the funny thing is that I know that on Prime, like, his movies are all, like, my watch list is laden with his movies.
I may have watched some out of competition.
No, this is and what's that great documentary on films that are made, by the way? And anybody remember in the Philippines?
I've seen it. The name's not coming to me. While someone looks it up, I want to talk about the Super Gun. So the movie opens, the opening credits are the Super Gun revolving slowly, like it's on a display. now Nick said that our hero builds the gun. That's not actually accurate. Our hero modifies a gun that is already supposed to be their best gun, making it even better. Cause he looks at it, he's like, this could be better. This could be better.
Okay, well, let's go back.
It's already got two barrels when he gets to it, and it's got four by the time he starts shooting stuff.
And yet it can be easily broken up by smashing it against a rock with very little effort. Let's go back even further. So there's the ownership, and then there's multiple fractions. So this is just one fraction. This is the fraction that luckily he ends up with faction that's luckily good. So the point is, though, that he's sitting there and he rescues the girls. She takes them back to their place. He's hurt. When he gets better, he walks around and just walks into the room where they're building. She is, and they're building this gun. And the guy who's building it, he's like, what's that? And she's like, it's got still some work to do, but that's our special weapon. So he goes and picks it up because he's a stranger who works for the ownership. So the guy says to him, hey, don't touch that. So he just holds it. And the next scene is him working on it. I'm like
a little kid. I'm not touching it. I'm not touching it.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, the guy just said don't touch it, and then just kind of looks at her and sighs and walks away, and I'm like, dude, you're letting this absolute stranger pick up this gun that but yeah, because it can not just shoot, but it can shoot like grenades or something, because explosions. And I don't know.
We've hassled them already for this gun and whether it should be what actual power a super gun has. But I realized late on in the movie that a gun with infinity bullets would be really, really special. I mean, most of the guns in this movie seem to have infinity bullets, but this one has infinity bullets for four different calibers, which is really impressive.
It is very impressive, and only one trigger necessary.
And yes, everybody ends up with the gun at one point or another.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, what a super weapon. It's fantastic in that you absolutely do not need any kind of, you know, concern, because like you can't hit anybody with it, so it doesn't matter. So it doesn't matter who gets it, because it's just like, I have the super weapon. This means that I control everything. Oh, I lost the super weapon. Damn.
My favorite example of that is when the lead character, Slade, is on a car, in a car, and they're being chased by a group of guys. And you can see they're like 8 feet behind him, and he's been firing away.
Hey, they had about 10 feet of road depending to go in that hole.
Depending on the next cut, the next edit, that car is either 8 to 80 feet away. They're like, oh, that's amazing.
Although, you know, a gun that can hit upwards of 1% of the time is better than every other gun in the movie.
That's true.
Except at night. I don't know if you knew that, but at night.
It's way better at night.
Way better, yes.
That gun can hit. Yeah, that thing's fantastic at night. When you can't see the enemy and just fire blindly, yeah, you take them out in swaths.
They're firing blindly anyways. Machete Maidens, by the way, was the name of the documentary.
What was it called?
Machete Maidens. Machete Maidens.
Yep. Yes. Great. Maybe want to. That's
Full title was Machete Maidens Unleashed.
Oh my bad.
Yeah, yes. Not to get it confused with the regular Machete.
This is the Unleashed version.
So just in case you're wondering, the documentary is Unleashed. The regular version, very leashed. Very leashed.
Extremely leashed.
Just like Equalizer 2000, leashed.
I called it the Swiss Army gun. That was what I called it. It just looked like a whole bunch of stuff glued to it.
And it's funny because the rest of the movie just really blends into a bunch of just shooting and the thing is that, you know, Jack talked about the factions, and I had no concept of who was what, like who was the ownership, who was the army guys, like the different factions of the ownership, the rebel encampment. Of course, we have another group of natives in here that have their bow and arrows, so thankfully that's a thing.
I love that's
what the future has taught us twice now.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that if there is great technology, don't worry, there'll be a group of natives around with technology from 400 years ago that is far deadlier than anything we currently have.
Yeah, it's it amazes me that came up twice.
in eight movies. That seems high.
Yeah, it really does.
25% of the movies this year are saved by bow and arrows.
Well, in fairness, they can't hit anybody with the guns in this one, so why not a bow and arrow, right? they actually did hit people with the bows and arrows, so that's a positive.
The roads look really well maintained for 100 years after the apocalypse. I gotta say,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The lines are freshly painted.
It is Alaska.
Great infrastructure projects, in the apocalypse.
I think it's fairly clear they use the same road in every chase scene.
Oh yeah, that is obvious.
They had the same 100 meters of road, and they used it a lot.
I mean, there is one scene that I was sort of saving this for what the WTF for his first escape. He travels the same patch of road about 14 times. Recognizably so. There's a sand drift that they keep going through, and each time they go through it, there's a different number of tracks through it.
I think one thing that confuses me is, why did it have to be Alaska?
that's very arbitrary. Yeah.
Like, Alaska? You know, you would think that they could have, like, it was like they had the script, and then they realized that they were going to shoot it in the Philippines, and then it was just kind of like, don't change it to something that looks like the Philippines. Alaska's fine.
I think they literally said, hey, nobody knows what Alaska would look like, right?
Yeah.
I think that was the theory. Whereas, you know, mountains and, they would talk. I don't know. Dude, this movie is, it's going to score very interesting, I'm sure. Nothing else.
Well, I'm sure you use that as a segue, so
let us take it. You know, I'm throwing it out there. If anybody would prefer to continue talking, I'm fine with that.
I think we've covered the plot. Honestly, there's a note I have written down. The 30 minutes in, still no plot. Please send snacks.
Yeah, no, there really is. It really is. Explosion, explosion, explosion. Scene with people talking with no character development or story. Explosion, explosion, explosion. Scene with no, you know.
You're roughly halfway. We get the halfway through. We get the gun that opened the movie. Yes. Actually gets introduced, and then we have that's just basically the MacGuffin for the rest of the film.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I will say this before we get to scoring, just real quickly. Robert Patrick in this, his second movie ever. Is it just me or did he look a hell of a lot like Daryl from Walking Dead?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's when I first saw him, I'm like Norman Reedus can't possibly be old enough.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, 100%.
All right.
In our search for the ultimate B movie, we rate each film in five categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category is called Schlock Appeal, and we start with Stan.
Just based on the sheer fact that that there's very minimal story, that it's almost like a TV show in the way that they shoot, and people just, you know, go jumping and flying in the bombs, you know, and the bombs can be, you know, 30, 40, 50 feet away from them, and they're still like flying away. So I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, I mean, these guys are just doing it and looking like a TV show from the 80s and the 90s. So I mean, overall, it's fun as heck to watch. It's not going to score in other cases, but I'm going to give this one an 8.
An 8. Wow. I thought you were going to go lower, and I was going to chastise you for not giving it more points for having 2000 in the title. But you've gone high, so I have to agree with you and go with the 8 as well.
It does have one of the best, probably, several of the best posters, I would say, movie posters, as many of these films from the Philippines actually did have. You know, it's great. Like, it's totally, it's incredibly schlocky. I mean, that's obvious, like, right away. But it drags because it's just the same explosion, 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 gunfight. Like, it drags after a while. So I'm only giving it a 6.
This would be the perfect movie, though, to watch in 15-minute chunks, though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Like, yeah, you wouldn't get lost.
My enjoyment peaked in the first 30 minutes. Like, that's where I enjoyed it the most.
I think the promise of this film and it is such a great sample of what that, like, VHS action films were of that era. If you wanted to sum them up and handed someone this, it would absolutely work. 8 for me as well. More heart than budget. And we don't know how much money.
No idea.
They spent Philippines money on this. So, yeah. You know, like, the thing is, there's a lot of explosions. There's a lot of bullets, or blanks. You know, there's a lot of flamethrowers. There's a lot of cars. There's a lot of things that get built out. Like, yes, it's Mad Max, but damn it, they put all of this stuff into it. And I mean, these actors are crazy, and the stuntmen that they have are jumping around and doing everything. It seems pretty balls out to me. I'm going to go with a 7.
I really, really thought, you know, there was some quality stuff going on there. I'll bump it up to an 8 just because Richard Norton stops and poses and flexes for the camera, gives us some good beefcake during the battle scene. So I think that's going the extra mile.
When he got on top of the car, that was a pretty cool stunt.
Was amazing.
Save that for
yeah. No, but it's, I mean, God, we don't know what the budget is, but I just don't know how much money a bunch of the sound of fake bullets and squibs and explosions would have cost in 1987 in the Philippines. Doesn't seem like
people
much.
People shot themselves on fire in several instances.
That's true. And the fire, which again, I think maybe in the Philippines in the action films, people were doing that left and right because, you know, they need to make a living somehow. I don't know. I'm going to give it a 6 just to even it out because it feels like 7 across the board should be. So don't screw this up here, Jim.
7 is actually what I wrote down there. I think I was going to go with 6, but the number of people who get set on fire does push that up. Yeah. That's fair enough. Yeah.
Some impressive fire stunts.
Yeah. What the fuck moments?
The biggest what the fuck, of course, is the gun in and of itself. You know, we could talk for an entire show on how that was built and how it's supposed to work and how it works terribly and never actually, you know, touch on enough for that gun. But some of the little things that I found, like, when they were at the rebel camp and the ownership was about to attack them, there's this spiky fence gate that comes down. And I'm not really 100% sure why it existed because it just kind of flopped back and forth as it came down. Like, well, okay, it spiked, but it's not going to stop anybody from pushing their way through it.
Really, all of their defensive measures seem to be ineffective against the assault of people who do not hold the high ground. and we all know from Star Wars that you can't win if you don't have the high ground. Despite it being dug in and outnumbered.
And having the Equalizer 2000 gun. You know, but
still couldn't hold it.
And they were willing to give it up very easily, I would say.
Yeah, they did abandon that place really fast.
The ownership in the first battle, especially the football helmets that they were wearing were quite comical. And one of the guys had had a helmet with flappy things on the top that would have obscured his vision. And I was just like, okay, I think it doesn't. I don't think it looks as cool as you thought it does. The Mustang that they drove had U.S. Air Force decals all over it, and I was thinking, did the Air Force have a lot of Mustangs in their fleet? Is that something that was
very odd.
That was a thing.
I'll give you that one. That was really strange.
and then for the rest of my what the fucks, it's entirely about Slade, our man Richard Norton. So. I noticed that, you know, Slade would be far more effective if he ever hit anything. Slade also has the best balance ever for being able to stand on top of the hood of that Mustang as it's being driven around rocky terrain. And also, near the end, or about, I guess, two-thirds of the way through, Slade brings a stick to a gunfight, and thankfully they don't actually shoot him. They just let him beat them up with the stick, even though they all have guns. You know, I can't go all the way, of course. It's an 8.
Yeah, you mentioned a bunch of them. I am still marveling at him jumping on the hood of that car because, well, I didn't see how that was more advantageous than staring where he was.
In the relative
safety of the car seat and shooting backwards than jumping on the hood of a car and shooting backwards. Made no sense to me whatsoever. The end, when the everyone who's left decides to throw down their arms because guns, obviously, in the post-apocalyptic universe are going to be useless because, you know, violence is being thrown away or something. They burn their guns.
Yeah, clips in and everything. Just throw them down, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, let's throw them on and, you know, we'll throw some spears on there too. So, you know, it'll burn, but that wasn't a very big fire to, you know.
It was symbolic, man. It was just symbolic of them choosing peace over war.
Yeah, just seems like a poor arms disposal method. Also, I found it a little bit odd. I mean, unless you knew something about Richard Norton, that he didn't kung fu fight in this. No. That's what he's known for.
The man that choreographed Jim Carter for us.
You'd think that would be where you'd go, because that's his skill set. But yeah. No, his skills are basically from hopping during gunfights from rock to rock. That seems to be the only thing they do in this movie. So, yep, that's my WTF. I'll go with a 7.
Yeah, no, it's right in the cusp. I can't decide between 7 and 8 on this, man. Like, it's definitely, the more we talk about it, you realize everything that we enjoy out of this comes from the WTF. And it's kind of repetitive in its WTF, but it's there. Like, I think nothing sums up the whole idea of the, okay, so the woman goes to make a deal with, I think she's trading explosions for gas or the other way around. Explosions for gas.
Okay, I understand why you're confused.
Little rockets.
She's trading water for rockets.
Rockets.
Okay, water for rockets. She's trading water
for
rockets.
No, it was fuel. It was gas.
Oh.
Yeah, it was gas.
Because they shot.
Explosions.
I thought they mentioned later in the village that water was their thing that they were selling. But, yeah, you're right.
I think they needed both water and gas. Both were rare at this point. I mean, after all, it's maxploitation, right? So anyway, she does this deal with Robert Patrick. He tries to screw her. She ends up running away with both the explosions and the gas at this point. So their decision is then to just not let anybody have the gas and just ruin the car. And they're chasing her. And luckily, Richard Norton, who had been kidnapped by the bad guys, his leader was told he went to the other side, and his leader just went, "Oh, okay, that seems logical."
Well, he seemed to hate him in the first place, so yeah, like yeah. they yeah, didn't so, get along for some reason.
That the other one is the one he didn't get along, anyways. So he just happens to be in the middle of the desert. She's running away. She's being chased by this guy. He has a gun now because he's escaped. Because what happens is he escapes on a car. And so their decision, as he's being driven away by this car that for some reason is driving away from its own village, being shot at with him on it for no reason anyways. So the point being, he's sitting there, and all of a sudden he starts shooting at Robert Patrick and his gang, right? And then for a while they're like, hey, there's both of them. Let's get them. And then they're chasing him and, you know, shooting them and blah, 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 and missing. And then eventually – they just go, hey, we better get out of here. All of a sudden they change from let's get up to we're going to get out of here. And then he shoots at them some more and as they're running away, and it lands right in front of them. And I'm like, is he trying to miss and shoot right in front of them to scare them? Is that – and like, well, why would he do that? And then the one guy turns and he shoots some more and misses some more, and then one guy turns around and goes, up yours. It's just like out of nowhere. To me, that epitomizes the bad shots in this film, that a guy would have the time to stop, turn around, and slowly say, up yours, while being shot at with no fear of being hit. I'm going to give it the 8.
So you explained the opening there before of our female leads. Karen is her name. I don't remember anyone actually calling her that, but that's what the credits tell me. So she's being chased, and she has two boxes of missiles. She rockets or missiles, I forget what they call it. They probably call them both at some point. She She puts down the accelerator and then rolls from the car, and it does the, like, it goes over a cliff and it all explodes. And I'm like, oh, okay. She's like doing the old fakey fake. Let make them think that she's dead. No, that doesn't happen at all. She destroyed the car for absolutely no reason and then runs off and then runs directly, like straight down the road, like in front of.
Well, in that terrain, running on foot, much faster than in a car.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I on flat ground. That's you're definitely going to beat a car.
Maybe she just didn't want the gang to get it.
If they can't have it, no one can.
That's right.
I've already forgot. Uprising? What was their name again?
The Ownership.
Ownership. Thank you. When the Ownership.
I keep on wanting to say the organization, but the Ownership is it. Yeah.
So the Ownership.
What do they own? Nothing.
To the well dug in camp that they can't hold for 10 minutes, so they roll up in four cars. These cars are a little overstuffed, so I count 16 guys, including the leader, that roll up in these four cars, and then they have this gigantic battle. There's like 80 people on the good guy side. There was 16 starting here on the bad guy side, and then they have this giant battle. A bunch of people get shot. Tons of people get shot on the good guy's side, and then they the bad guys regroup, and at that point I count 20 of them. so I guess that's how you overrun them. It's like we shot a bunch and they just duplicated. There's no way we can fight against that.
That's true. Especially having the Equalizer 2000 weapon, which just doesn't actually get used.
And he just smashes at the end, even though it's very obvious at the end of this film, because he doesn't stay with the faction he's with, even though the thought chick and everything, who clearly he's a boned at this point, though we didn't see anything. He drives away like the ultimate loner, and it feels like they're setting up a sequel so badly.
Well, I mean, Raiders of the Sun is a very similar movie that uses footage from this movie, so.
That does Although not make me want to watch it.
I believe the Ownership in that movie is called Alpha Team.
So
could be a translation thing.
So the bad guy who led the assault gets a hold of the I'm going to assume the gun's called the Equalizer 2000, for want of something else. So he gets the gun. He goes back to his boss, and his boss is like, "Hey, you got the big gun." He's like, "Yeah, and it's so great, I'm going to take over." And they're all like, "Really? That like you owning that gun is really all that it takes to take over this entire organization. This seems like there might be a flaw in our power structure here."
Well, the boss was an old man.
He was, but I feel like if that was the case, you could have taken it over with any gun.
Well, given the power level of the Equalizer 2000.
Mm-hmm. Yes, given the just awe-inspiring power of Equalizer 2000. 8 for me as well. Memorable moments.
I think the Equalizer 2000, like the look of that gun, is memorable. No question about it. As far as the rest of the movie goes, I don't think that there'll be a lot that pops back into my head. I think that it's one of those cases where when you look at this movie, I mean, 70 minutes of battle for no apparent reason, battling over the same things time and time again. It's pretty standard fare, so I'm just going to go with a 4.
Looking over Richard Norton's credits, there are at least 6 movies I immediately assume are retitles of this film. I don't think I could tell them apart a week from now. I had to start like 3 of them just to make sure they weren't retitles of this film. So I'm only going to give this one a 3.
Yeah, I got it even lower. I got it as a 2. It is the most generic explosion, explosion, explosion. Nothing really happens. Gun shooting movie. It's fun to watch, but it's not memorable in any way, shape, or form. I'll struggle to remember it a month from now.
It is a great like background movie to have on it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, if you, I mean, because of the number of gunfights, if you put this on like at a party and you're, where you're not going to be listening to it, that'd be great. The lovely Corrine Wall again, where Jack's there are no bras in the future rule. That's the best observation we've had in this entire season. Only three for me as well. Crazy concept is our last category.
See, these last two categories are where I knew that this movie was going to break down, and there's no question that it breaks down. Like, you can't even explain the concept to me because I'm not completely sure that they knew what the concept was, other than we make a big gun. Sure, but why? Because it doesn't do anything. But so, there's really not much. I mean, this is standard action at, you know, at its best slash worst. Three.
I'll give it a one for the setting it in Alaska.
That's actually fair. Hey, it's Alaska. Really? No, it's not.
Yeah. Are you done there, Nick?
I'm done.
Yeah, no, that's about right. I mean, you take Mad Max and throw in a plot point from Yojimbo and you got this film. Too, like it is getting killed in these categories, man.
I'm gonna say that It's in Alaska is worth a point on its own, and I think that despite the super gun not being effective, I think any plot that revolved around a super gun as the pitch is a bit of a wacky concept. So I'm gonna go all the way up to a four.
Shouldn't it be being in the future and every other gun being just a regular gun from our time, even though it's 50 years or whatever in the future, at least, if not 80, shouldn't this one to be a super gun have been more super? Like, I don't know, like a laser or something? Something that nobody had.
But I'd like to know, how did the rebels, like this little tiny group of rebels were the ones who managed to put this together? It wasn't like a well... Armed
technology that didn't exist. They just decided to put all the barrels in one gun.
They just had a bunch of they bored out a whole bunch of barrels, and they still had this technology of super glue.
Yeah.
And then one magazine or three magazines taped together and one trigger, and you've got yourself a weapon.
That's 200-year-old technology.
Yeah.
Now, would this movie have changed if the super gun was not in it? Because, I mean, Richard Norton was out for revenge, so everything in this movie would have happened whether they had the super gun or not.
Not necessarily. I think the takeover, like the stuff with the ownership near the
would
end.
Would have happened because he could have used a regular gun.
Yeah, but, he could have used a regular gun, but it wouldn't have given him the cred.
Do you really think if he walks into that room and doesn't pick up that gun and instead decides to go after them, he still doesn't take them down single-handedly?
Well, of course. I mean, we knew that Richard Norton was going to take them down. I don't – like, he is – like, his side of the story, absolutely. It could totally happen without the super gun. There's a few points within that – within and around that I think the super gun was – loosely necessary for, but it is definitely a MacGuffin.
All right, well that gives us a final total of 55.5 out of 100, which ties Skidoo and is really close to the Dead End Drive-In was a 55, Omega Cop was a 56, Cherry 2000 was a 57. Apparently, the bulk of this season sitting in a really narrow band.
It's funny though, because I think in a lot of cases these movies are so much alike to other movies, because when you talk about the future, I think they've seen like, oh, the future is this, so we're going to make a movie based on this, you know?
Yeah, based on Mad Max, so that is not a problem in the next film.
It is not, no.
Yeah, and I guess it's of the time, too. I mean, the idea that the future would be after a nuclear war was just very present in the 80s, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. There's no question about that.
The way that you framed the future was a guarantee there's going to be a nuclear war at some point, so we'll just be after that.
It was when, not if.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. we got to get to some business. Before we get to some business, in order for business to make sense, we almost have to make an explanation here, don't we?
Sure.
Okay, go for it.
All right. As you'll notice, there's a certain word that has been the history of this podcast that we have not included into this episode, and we will no longer be using going forward, as that word has been taken over by a movement whose views, values, motivations, and actions do not represent this show, its hosts, or its affiliates in any way, shape, or form. Therefore, we feel the need to immediately rebrand ourselves in a different manner, and we'll be announcing the new name of the show. Everything will remain the same. The old shows will be archived the same with it's just a statement up front, and you know, telling people about why it has a different title than what we'll be using going forward and such. But yeah, we are making a change. We are rebranding. We will announce the name in the next episode of what we'll be doing. And for that reason, I think it's going to be difficult as we do business. Just trying to put it out here for you, Jim. I don't know how you tell people about the Instagram. It's basically what I'm saying.
I will leave the Instagram out. WeTalkPodcast.com, our good friends at WeTalkPodcast.com, continue to be the home of the Octagon, and, will be the home of whatever we are.
Does anybody else have anything to add?
They have a Twitter. They have a Facebook.
Yeah. Anybody have anything to add as regards to the rebranding and why and such?
I think it's unfortunate that we wanted. And really, this show has been built around a simple premise, which is that there's too much. There's too much negativity in the world. There's too much terrible things, and we wanted to do something that celebrates B films specifically, something that puts some joy into the world, and so it's unfortunate that we had to take this step.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
Yeah, it was all about celebration, and so yes, it's there's too many people who are not about celebrating the positives.
No, it could not be what this is that we're standing for is now could not be further from what this show is its intentions are. So.
All right, and speaking of further from reality, well, next episode we are talking about the Apple, and that one is very far from reality, so I think we're going to need some time to talk about that. So does anybody have anything else to say?
No.
I hope not.
I do hope they, keep track of us for words on what's going to be happening, and maybe listen to next episode. Probably set yourself a couple hours though, because we're talking about the Apple.
Most importantly, just go to WeTalkPodcast.com and you will find our next iteration on there. So for Jim and for Jack and for Nick, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and thanks for listening to KFAB.
100 years after the nuclear winter, these scorched wastelands are controlled by a military government. The ownership.
Don't let up! Wonder how many I can get with one bullet.
Touch him.
There's a rebel wind rising.
The ownership?
Slade has created the balance. A killing machine. The ultimate destroyer. The equalizer. When destiny is determined by greed.
I'm stripping you of command, McClane.
Uncontrollable lust.
I'd love to blow you guys, right?
And revenge.
I'm gonna kill him if it's the last thing I do.
Slave. The equalizer. is where our future lies.